about hurting my feelings. Her derisive snort was automatic, a familiar shield. Don't flatter yourself. I care about everyone's feelings. Yeah. What about your own? She sucked in a breath to say something cutting or witty or otherwise distracting, only it got caught in a tangle at the back of her throat. Tell me what happened, he said, his proximity turning her pulse into a tempest. Tell me about your before. Chapter 10. Red didn't know why he was pushing, why he felt so ravenous for any scrap of the woman sitting before him, but when she curled her knees under her and faced him completely, when those spilled ink eyes met his and her velvet voice wrapped around him, it felt right. It felt like exactly what he'd wanted. Even though her quiet words ripped into his chest. I used to have friends. I used to have a fiancé, even. She said that with a wry smile and an arch of those winged eyebrows, like she thought that might surprise him. It did, and it didn't. She wasn't a social person exactly, but she was damned hypnotic. Of course she'd had friends, and yet apparently she'd also lost them. I suppose the end of all that started when I got pneumonia, she said, hooking her arm around a nearby cushion, pressing it to her chest. Apparently I nearly died. All I remember is how it felt. He wondered if she noticed she was squeezing that cushion, the sort of vulnerable move she usually avoided like the plague. Probably not. In the space of a few seconds, she'd somehow become so distant. My bones were like eggshells. There was this cold, wet toad squatting on my chest, too heavy and chilling for me to breathe right. She said it so steadily, but he saw a hint of remembered panic in her eyes. I remember being so angry with myself, because it was so silly the way I got sick. I used to play netball and I'd be nervous about a particular game. I'd stayed out in the rain with some of my friends running drills. We won the match, but I was in the hospital a few days later. Obviously, I survived, she quipped, as if he needed a reminder of her continued existence. He didn't laugh. But, she went on grimly, my body was different. The weight on my chest and the cold, they faded as I got better, but my bones still felt fragile. It never went away. Over the months, I noticed more and more problems. I was exhausted all the time. I got these awful headaches for no reason. And there was the pain, always. So much pain. I'd go for a walk and feel like I'd worked every muscle to the point of tearing. If I spent too long on my laptop, my hands would hurt so badly I cried. I started feeling afraid of my own body, like it was a torture chamber I'd been trapped inside. But when I asked for help, no one would listen. I'm lucky my family believed me, because for years they were the only ones. I remember one doctor asked to speak with my father, even though I was an adult. He told my dad I was physically fine, but they should look into my mental health. She laughed. But the sound was too loud, too edgy, grating against his skin. Red curled his hands into useless fists in his lap, fighting the urge to touch her, to stroke her hair or pull her into a hug, the way he might if she were someone, anyone else. Usually he offered comfort to help other people, but she looked so determinedly brittle right now. Eyes sharp, jaw hard, chin up. He knew comfort wasn't what she wanted. He'd only be doing it for himself, because he could see how trapped she'd felt, and it made him feel hollow inside. I mean, don't get me wrong, she said dryly. My mental health was a mess at that point, and having actual medical professionals dismiss me really didn't help, so... She squeezed her eyes shut for a moment. Of course it didn't, he said, his voice rough. Almost rusty with the anger he didn't want to show. Whether something bad is coming from your body or your brain, it makes no difference. Still feels like shit, right? Still hurts, still needs fixing. They shouldn't have dismissed you, even if it was in your head. When it comes down to it, everything we feel is in our heads. She opened her eyes, wet her lips, nodded slowly and looked a little bit less tortured. When she spoke again, her voice was smooth and arch and familiar. I do hate to admit when you're right, but you happen to have stumbled upon a sensible opinion there. Somehow for her, he dredged up a smile. Must be a blue moon. Keep going. She swallowed so hard he heard it. Right, yes, well, I was diagnosed in the end. My consultant believes major physical trauma can trigger conditions like mine. She thinks it was the pneumonia. But that doesn't really matter. What matters is that for years I had no idea what was really happening to my body. No painkillers, no physical therapy, no medical support whatsoever. So I did what I had to do. I developed my own coping mechanisms. The problem is they weren't particularly healthy. He wondered what it was like to cope constantly. Tiring, probably. Stressful, definitely. Doing it alone didn't sound healthy at all. I avoided anything that might make me feel worse, she said. I was afraid. No inflection, no emotion, as if she was reading someone else's story from a sheet of paper. I quit netball. I quit my postgrad degree. I stopped going out with my friends. I didn't stay up late because sleep was too precious. I refused to make plans because I never knew when my body might force me to change them. My friends disappeared one by one. I suppose my problems made them feel guilty. And your fiancé? Red asked softly. Oh, Henry, she laughed. He lost patience almost immediately. He didn't believe me. What? Red had been trying to stay calm throughout this story, to avoid showing his own reactions in case they affected what she chose to share. But he couldn't have hidden his disgust in that moment. Not even if he'd pulled out his own fucking tongue. She shrugged, but a smile teased the edges of her mouth, as if she found his obvious horror amusing. There was no blood test or scan or injury to prove that I was really in pain. He was very logical, you see. He needed evidence, and I had none. Your word isn't evidence. Your feelings aren't evidence, Red demanded, his tone harsher than he'd intended. But he couldn't help it. He'd seen the change in Chloe when her pain got too serious to handle. Fuck, he saw her now, when she was trying to seem fine but was clearly exhausted. Black circles under her beautiful eyes, weariness clinging to her like a shadow. How the fuck could someone who planned to marry her just ignore all that? Henry thought I was malingering, she told him. That I was being pathetic. I was too demanding. I needed too much support. Her lip curled, displaying a flash of anger that had been absent so far, one he was actually relieved to see now. He disappeared on me without much remorse, but I consider that a lucky escape. So did Red. It didn't sound like marriage material. Her eyes slid to his, sparkling with humour. No, he sounds like the type of guy who finds out his wife has cancer and starts screwing his secretary to relieve the stress. Yes, she said, smiling now. Fuck him. I pity whoever is, she smirked. Then she waved a hand and the moment of camaraderie passed. I've learned how to manage my symptoms now, of course. I have medication, physiotherapy, cognitive therapy. I'm fine, really. But I feel like a part of me hasn't caught up with that. Like I'm still afraid of myself. That's what the list is for. To help me get my bravery back. She began that speech sounding like her usual self, but toward the end she started to mumble, her voice growing smaller, her eyes skating away from his, like she was embarrassed to say the most badass thing he'd ever heard. He couldn't let that stand. Hey, she pursed her lips and glared at him without much heat.
What?
If this list is supposed to make you braver, you're gonna be fucking Wonder Woman by the time we're done. She snorted, rolling her eyes, but he could tell she was pleased. It oozed out of her like jam from a layer cake, and he was lapping the sweetness up, desperate for more. Also, he added, just to make it really clear, your fiancé was a fucking donkey cock for leaving you. He liked the way she laughed at that. Not her usual low chuckle, but a gasping, breathless giggle that she clearly hadn't meant to show him. She pressed her hands to her plumped-up cheeks as if she could push the laughter back inside, but it didn't work. She just kept going, and his grin grew wider and wider. Your friends were fucking useless and all, he told her. Load of twats, the lot of them. She pressed a hand to her chest, over the ridiculous furry all-in-one thing she was wearing. True, she managed between giggles. Very true. Although I don't know why I told you about that. It's not the point. It's incidental. Did she really believe that? When he could see her pain a mile off? When her eyes shuttered with sadness as she talked about the people who hadn't stuck by her? His voice softened. You should make new friends now. You shouldn't be lonely. That wiped the smile off her face, though not from her eyes. She scowled at him, trying to look outraged. For some twisted reason, he liked it. I don't need new friends, she said. And I am not lonely. You are, he insisted, partly because it was true, mostly because he enjoyed pissing her off almost as much as he enjoyed making her laugh. Stubborn as fuck, she shot back. I am not. You are. Redford Morgan, I will throw you out of my flat. He grinned. But I have a key. Which you would never use without due cause, she countered, because you are a very good superintendent. There was that flash of dizzying sweetness. The one she kept teasing him with, the one that made his grin turn wicked and his voice dip low, even as his logical brain screamed that flirting was a shitty idea. Oh, yeah. How good. She blinked rapidly, and he could have sworn she was blushing. Well, I don't know, she muttered awkwardly. I don't actually have much experience with superintendents. So I'm your first. Good to know. She was definitely blushing now. Red? I'm just teasing your button. He was, wasn't he? Teasing her and enjoying it way too much. Don't faint on me now. Right, she said dryly. Excuse me while I swoon. She looked hot enough to, in that outfit. The fluffy grey pyjamas swallowed her whole, and even though she'd opened a window earlier, he could see a bead of sweat creeping down the line of her throat. His eyes followed that tiny drop's path like he was a wolf, and it was lunch. Now he'd noticed it, he couldn't look away. Couldn't drag his thoughts away. Couldn't remember what exactly they'd been talking about, only that he'd made her blush and he'd enjoyed it. The drop had reached the hollow between her collarbones now, exposed by her slightly lowered zipper. He wanted to lick it away. Wait, no, he didn't. No, he didn't. Oh, for fuck's sake. Yes, he did. Red, she said, her voice a little bit shaky, but not the way it had been earlier. This time, it shook the way his muscles did when he was pushing it at the gym, like she was aching with adrenaline. You should really take that off, he said, his throat dry, his mouth moving like it belonged to someone else. Her tongue darted out to wet her lips. She patted nervously at her hair. Take what off? Your clothes, he said, because he was concerned for her health, obviously. Whatever that thing is you're wearing, you should take it off. Chloe replied rather intelligently, yep. You're sweating, Red went on, his gaze oddly fixated at the base of her throat, probably staring in mild disgust at the aforementioned sweat. For approximately the thousandth time that day, she cursed her numb-footed, sleepless night and all that it had led to. There he sat, devastatingly handsome, and she was sweating in a lima outfit like a child who didn't know how to dress herself. She tangled her fingers in the fabric, scrabbled for the last scraps of her dignity, and said firmly, "I'm fine." "You don't seem fine." His gaze moved from her throat to her face, studying her with a stomach-clenching intensity that made her blood shudder its way through her veins. The way he watched her made Chloe feel so present, noticed, touched, and not in the emotional way. Her skin tingled in anticipation of a contact that would never be made. She was suddenly disturbingly conscious of the fact that she wore very little under this onesie. Very little, as in, he could rip down the zip and she'd be standing there in nothing but her knickers. This odd attraction she felt toward him was getting out of hand. She kept hearing a feral edge to his voice that couldn't possibly be there, felt a heat in his gaze that must be 100% her imagination. She tried to control her breathing and look innocent, as opposed to looking like the depraved mess she was. It didn't work. "Chloe," Red nudged, his little frown returning. She wanted to smooth it out with her fingers. "What?" she asked faintly. Gigi appeared helpfully on her shoulder and said, "Don't mumble, darling. Nice big voice. Repeat after me. I want to ride you like a stallion." Danny appeared on Chloe's other shoulder and drawled, "Don't forget to say please." A tiny phantom Eve joined the fray and said,
"Don't listen to those two. Actions speak louder than words. Jump him."
"You're too hot," Red said.
"I'm not." He pressed the back of his hand to her cheek. The contact sent a jagged shock of arousal through her. She didn't mean to react, but her next inhale came rather sharply, so sharply she made a soft, hungry sound. And he noticed. Whoops. After a pause, he caught her chin and turned her to face him, which was unfair because staring straight ahead had been her only coping strategy. His gaze unravelled her expertly in approximately 2.3 seconds. She saw the precise moment that he realised she was a breathless, horny little demon with a ridiculous crush on him. His eyes widened slightly, as if she'd shocked him witless. Then those spring-green irises heated, were slowly swallowed up by dark pupils. He sighed, almost shakily. He leaned closer and bent his head until his brow rested against her temple, skin on skin, technically chaste. And yet, it felt so reckless, so charged, so shockingly intimate. His hair was a curtain cutting the both of them off from reality, silk swinging softly against her cheek. The scent of him, warm and earthy and comforting, imprinted itself in her mind, forever associated with this moment, this trembling, achingly close moment when they breathed, deep and desperate, in sync. Once upon a time, Chloe remembered, she had absolutely loved sex. "So, it's like that," he murmured, the words almost tender, sinking into her skin.
"No."
Her voice was a ragged whisper, broken by sharp inhalations. She was drinking down his presence before he could take it away. He laughed softly, each puff of air a kiss to her sensitive throat.
"You are such a shitty liar."
"True."
She closed her eyes. The way he drew her in, from his smile to his confidence to his honest charm. This attraction was forceful and unexpected, a riptide lying in wait beneath the smooth surface of her own mind. Now she'd sunk a bit too deep and been snatched under. She wasn't sure which way was up anymore. He found the fingers she'd tangled up in fleecy fabric and eased them gently apart, which was a relief because she'd been in danger of clenching her fists hard enough to hurt herself. It took her a second to realise that he was holding her hand. She could feel his cool, dry palm against her clammy one, right up to the point where her wrist supports covered her skin. He was holding her hand. He was lacing their fingers together carefully as if to connect them.
Why?
She didn't know how to ask, and since she liked it, asking seemed silly anyway. He might come to his senses and let go. She might come to her senses and pull away. Far better to keep quiet. He kissed her jaw, softly, so softly, but she still whimpered. He'd been so slow and languid, but at the sound of that whimper, everything about him tensed. He murmured roughly,
"I like that,"
and brushed his lips over her skin again, as if to tease out more sound. Her nipples tightened, but she swallowed her breathy sigh. So he tried harder, though it felt lighter. His tongue flicked her earlobe, traced the shell of her ear. She moaned. He made a low, raw noise of satisfaction and held her hand tighter, as if he were sinking too when he needed something to cling to. She was dissolving like sugar in hot tea. Her breaths were shallow, her temperature was rocketing in a way that had nothing to do with her outfit, and her desire was a drumbeat pulse pounding between her legs. Her pussy was so swollen it felt like a fist clenched between her thighs. She was coming apart at the seams. Thank her lucky stars that all he'd done so far was tease, because if he really bit into her the way she wanted him to, she might faint dead away. If he really bit into her the way she wanted him to, she might bite back. And then what? Would he strip her naked, shag her senseless, and see her on Saturday night to continue the list? She didn't know. She didn't know. What did it mean when a man you made deals with and sent slightly flirtatious emails to licked your ear and held your hand? What did it mean? It certainly wasn't professional or transactional or simple, not in her case anyway. She was quite sure of that. He slid a hand over the back of her neck, warm and solid and deliciously firm. Sensation spiked between her legs.
"Chloe," he said, his voice like gravel. "I want to kiss you. Can I kiss you?"
He turned her on so badly she felt dizzy. She couldn't look at him because she knew what she'd see. Living, breathing sex, a man who could so easily make a mess of her. She was melting for him and they barely knew each other. She wanted to sob out her pleasure and he'd barely done anything to cause it. She was losing control. She made herself whisper, "Stop." He obeyed her the same way he did everything. Calm, easy, as though it had been his idea. His mouth left her skin before she'd even finished speaking the word. The warmth of his proximity faded, and she knew he'd pulled back. He squeezed her hand once before he let go. His expression was unreadable, but his cheeks were flushed. Her mind fixated on that because it seemed so impossibly vulnerable. Impossible, full stop. Why would he be flushed? He was cool and confident and probably made women wet with a bit of hyper-sexy hand-holding a few times a week, just to keep himself sharp. Except according to the kiss of crimson painting his high cheekbones, maybe he didn't. The sight of that flush, of the slightly glassy look in his eyes, of his soft parted lips, filled her with reckless regret. She wanted to grab him by the hair and drag him back. She wanted to twine their fingers together again and ground herself in him. It was on her list, after all. Meaningless sex. But some wise and protective instinct, hidden deep in the prehistoric part of her brain, warned her that nothing would be meaningless with someone like Red. And if it wasn't meaningless, she didn't want it. When it came to feelings, to relationships, to more, Chloe was off men. He shut his eyes for one long moment, and when they opened again, he looked a little more like himself. And a little less like a creature sent from planet Lust to sex her to death, which was good. Very, very good.
"Are you okay?"
he asked softly, clearly concerned.
"Did I?"
Gosh, he was sweet. She needed to get him out of here before she cracked completely. "I'm fine," she said brightly. Possibly a touch too brightly, but it was too late now. She was committed. "I'll see you on Saturday to continue with the list." She sounded like a chipmunk on helium. He hesitated, then said quietly,
"Do you still want to do that? With me, I mean. It's okay if you don't."
"Oh, I want to do a lot with you." She was going to have to start tapping herself on the nose with a rolled-up newspaper. Her mind was out of control and needed training.
Yes, I still want to do that with you. I promise everything's fine.
She stood up and made vague, shooing motions in his direction.
Off you go, then.
He stood too, smiling now. I wrote the details in your little book. I know you like plans.
Wonderful, fabulous, much appreciated.
She shoved him bodily out of the room. His smile widened. I take it. You don't want to talk about...
Goodbye, Redford.
She herded him toward the hall. About me kissing you.
Ah!
She strode past him to unlock the front door, holding it open.
No more talk. I'm a poor disabled woman who is not to be harassed with unnecessary conversation.
He burst out laughing. She pushed him out of the door. Chapter 11. Saturday evening had never been so fraught. 2 days and a few too many flushed forbidden daydreams after that very professional meeting with Red, Chloe sat with her laptop perched on her knees and her sparkly blue notebook in one hand. He had indeed written out the details for her, right down to the bars and nightclubs they would visit, and as she passed the time until his arrival by researching those establishments online, she couldn't help but notice that they were all very close together. Close enough that walking from building to building probably wouldn't tire her out. She closed her browser window with a tut, still not sure if she was pleased by that discovery or if she found Red's behaviour presumptuous. She had a feeling it was the former, but she so wanted to believe the latter. It would make it considerably easier to resist feeling mushy things toward him. And since escaping his intoxicating presence and remembering that men possessed less loyalty than the average flea and caused more emotional trouble than they were worth, Chloe had decided she must indeed resist. It wasn't that she assumed he'd leap at the chance to become the next fiancé to abandon her, but whatever their relationship, he would leave her life eventually. Everyone did in the end, and it would be easier to watch him go if they kept the kissing to a minimum. It would probably be easier if they kept the funny, flirty emails to a minimum too, but he'd kept sending those and, well, ignoring him would be rude. Plus, he took her mind off of certain things, somewhat. On the coffee table, Smudge was delicately licking his own arsehole in flagrant convention of the established house rules, a sight that, bizarrely, plucked at something sad beneath Chloe's breastbone. Beside him sat Chloe's phone, and from the speakers, a familiar voice was emanating. It had not stopped emanating, in fact, for the last 10 bloody minutes. "You're very grumpy today, darling," Gigi said. "Are you feeling delicate?"
"No,"
Chloe said, the word both flat and honest. She was physically passable. Her misery was 100% emotional today. Being unhappy made her irritable, even more irritable than severe back pain. "Well, whatever is the matter then?" Gigi asked. Redford-based confusion and Saturday night anxiety aside, Smudge was the matter. Chloe had finally taken him to the vets yesterday, and what had she discovered? Why, that he had an owner, of course. An owner who'd put a chip in him like he was some sort of computer. The vet assured her that chips were both humane and safety conscious. But since Smudge's chip meant that she absolutely could not keep him, she found herself violently opposed to the concept. "Darling," Gigi murmured, "are you growling?" Chloe gave herself a little shake. "Absolutely not. Why would I ever do such a thing?" Gigi sighed fondly. "Such strange granddaughters I have. I'm so proud. Your father is depressingly ordinary." Chloe's dad was a financial analyst with zero inclination toward the outrageous, which disappointed Gigi no end. He never took off his herringbone coat and speedwalked everywhere and said things like, "Bear with me a moment, please." He'd spent Chloe's entire school career slipping encouraging notes into her book bag because he knew how much she hated English class. If Martin Brown was ordinary, she wished everyone else would be. But she didn't bother saying any of that, because Gigi would roll her eyes and call his tie choices utterly uninspired.
"I'm not strange."
"You are, darling. Not as strange as Danica, I'll grant you, but still. Now, what have you been up to today, my sweet little onion? Onion was not the weirdest thing Chloe had ever been called by her grandmother. I took my stray cat to the vet and discovered that he belongs to a control freak with no respect for the sanctity of the feline body. Her name is Annie. Annie. Outrageous. I despise her already.
She is on holiday, if you believe it, Chloe said acidly. Her cat is missing and she has gone abroad.
Thoroughly shocking, murmured Gigi, who had once gone on a cruise to the Mediterranean while her third husband remained at home with a shattered femur. Of course, as she had informed all who questioned her decision, I did not tell the fool to shatter his femur during a perfectly lovely July.
When she returns, Chloe bit out, she will phone me and I will be expected to hop to it and give back her cat. Well, I don't know if she's fit to own a cat. I found Smudge in mortal peril.
A reasonable person might have pointed out that no cat had ever died of falling from a tree, and also that cats were uncontrollable creatures, but luckily, Gigi wasn't reasonable. She said in soothing tones, "The woman is an unfit mother. I'm sure of it."
"So am I. Do you know?"
Chloe was cut off by a knock at the door. Her middle melted like chocolate fudge cake. She hadn't realized the time. It was red. The skin over her collarbone tingled as if he'd marked her with his heated gaze.
Are you there, darling?
Gigi nudged. Chloe cleared her throat and locked her inappropriate thoughts away.
Back in the vault you go. I have to go. Someone's at the door.
Someone? Gigi said gleefully. Why, darling, whoever could it be? You sound flustered.
I'm not flustered. And I don't know who it is.
You sound, Gigi murmured, as though you are telling fibs.
How could she tell? She could always tell. It must be a grandmotherly superpower. We'll talk about this later, Chloe squeaked. Got to dash. Love you, bye.
She ended the call, huffed out a breath, then patted her robe self-consciously. Between worrying about tonight and worrying about Smudge, she'd somehow managed to lose all sense of time, and now Red was here and she was barely dressed and, oh God, this was all going horribly. She grabbed Smudge for good luck and rushed to get the door. Still, she felt oddly buoyant, almost giddy as she went. Redford was big and broad on her welcome mat, his smile almost tentative, his hair spilling over his shoulders like liquid fire. He was wearing jeans and a flannel shirt, the sleeves rolled up to expose forearms ridged with fine veins and thick tendons, and sprinkled with barely visible golden hair. Not that she was staring or anything.
Evening, he said, his voice low and rich and calm, always calm.
Clearly, he was not at all bothered by the fact that the last time they'd seen each other, he'd slid his tongue over her ear. Well, if he wasn't bothered, then neither was she.
I'm very sorry, she said, holding Smudge against her chest. I'm afraid I'm going to make us late.
Chloe's email that afternoon had been short and to the point. But Red must have learned her language these past few days because he'd known straight away she was upset.
Took Smudge to the vet. He's chipped, has owner.
Oh, yeah, she was upset. But she obviously didn't want to talk about it, so he hadn't planned on bringing it up. Then she answered the door with that apologetic frown, her lip caught between her teeth, and Smudge held against her chest, and he couldn't have kept his mouth shut for all the money on earth.
You okay?
He asked, completely ignoring what she'd just said, because apparently he was that kind of guy now. She raised her eyebrows, that divine Rococo face as striking as ever.
I'm in a mood. But then I usually am. Why?
I got your message about Smudge and...
I don't want to talk about Smudge,
she said, her voice sharp. Not so long ago, that sharpness would have jabbed him like a thorn. Now it popped his heart like a balloon, because he knew it meant that she was hurting and hiding and dealing with her feelings all alone. Women who saved cats and wrote ridiculous lists and took deals painfully seriously shouldn't deal with their feelings alone. No one should. But before he could tell her that, something about her seemed to soften and she said quickly,
"We're going to have fun this evening. It will be a list-ticking success. That's what I want to think about. Not smudge."
He ran a hand through his hair and nodded, holding her gaze. Her eyes were big and dark and a little too bright behind her glasses. He wanted to touch her, but all things considered, that was probably a bad idea. So he kept his clumsy hands to himself and swore silently that he'd make her smile tonight, one way or another.
"All right," he said.
The tension between them dissolved, or maybe it had just faded for a while.
"Come on, then,"
she said brightly, stepping back to let him in, which was when he noticed her outfit. Or her lack of one. She was wearing some silky robe thing, and the skirt ended just above the knee. He'd been drooling over her fucking ankles for weeks. Now he stared at the inch of thigh just above her knees and decided he should have jacked off before he came over. Twice. Three times even. His balls ached just looking at her. Was this normal? This couldn't be normal. She shoved the cat at him, turned in a dangerous whirl of short silky skirt, and started off down the hall. Red stared at the cat. The cat stared at him. If he were the kind of man who really understood animals, he might say this particular cat was sending him a telepathic message that went something like, "Get your dirty pervert eyes off my mum."
"Sorry, mate,"
he muttered, and shut the door and made his way to the living room. She was bending over by the TV, switching off all the plug sockets. The hem of her robe lifted for a split second, and he caught a flash of bare brown skin before he looked away. All his nerve endings sparked to life, even as he begged them to calm the hell down. Everything in him turned hot and liquid, except his dick, which was, of course, rock-fucking-hard. He sat down and held Smudge over his lap. And because God was having a great time taking the piss out of Red today, Chloe turned around and zeroed in on the sight with a smile.
"I thought you didn't like cats."
"Yeah, well," he cleared his throat. "Maybe I judged before I really got to know them. They're not as snooty as they seem. My bad."
He watched as surprise flickered across her face.
"Oh."
She shot him a quick, shy smile, and his heart burst like a firework.
"Okay then, I'm just going to get dressed. I'll be 5 minutes."
"Don't rush. Don't matter if we're later than we planned."
She gave him the same indulgent nod mothers gave their nonsense-babbling toddlers and hurried out of the room, probably intending to ignore him. While she was gone, Red decided to occupy himself by listing the many, many reasons why he shouldn't lust after Chloe anymore, even if he desperately wanted to, really enjoyed it, and wasn't totally sure he could stop. 1. He'd come on to her, and she had very firmly shut him down. No matter how much he thought about the taste of her skin or the sound of her moans, it wasn't happening. So he should stop torturing himself now. 2. If he didn't stop, she might notice, and then she'd be uncomfortable. He was her superintendent, for Christ's sake, which he probably should have thought about before he'd put his hands on her. He couldn't make her uncomfortable, it just wasn't right. 2.5. Vic would slaughter him, and then Alicia would beat his corpse with a hairbrush. 3. Thoughts of her were starting to distract him at work. 4. He hadn't masturbated this much since he was a kid, and he was worried his balls might permanently shrivel up like walnuts. He was just working on number 5 when Chloe reappeared, ruining everything. He thought the robe was bad, but now... Now, she wore a dress the colour of gold-edged moonlight, the fabric stretching tight over roller coaster curves that deserved their own hazard warning. That outfit cupped every inch of her the way his hands wanted to. Her cleavage was so deep she might as well just throw in the towel and go topless. He consoled himself with the fact that the dress was longer than the robe until she moved and a thigh-high slit made itself known. Fuck. Her face wasn't any easier to look at. Her eyes yanked him in like twin black holes, and her lush lips shone with some kind of makeup. Her hair was different, pulled back in a thick, fancy braid he didn't know the name of, one he'd like to wrap around his fist while he kissed her pretty mouth. He was fucked. He was absolutely fucked. She came to stand in front of him, clutching a little gold bag.
Is this appropriate?
Appropriate? He cleared his throat. Don't fuck up. Don't fuck up. Don't fuck up. Well, it doesn't have buttons, but it'll do. She laughed and hit him on the shoulder with her bag. He wondered absently if he'd survive the night. Chapter 12. Walking toward the entrance of a nightclub was like leaping back in time. Except in her teens and early 20s, Chloe had never felt the cold, whereas right now she was shivering her barely supported tits off. The night was made of layered shadows and flashing neon lights. Rain and icy threat in the air that kissed her overheated skin, freezing her nervousness dead. She was too busy regretting her skimpy outfit to question if she should be here at all. That, she supposed, was a solid silver lining. Red was in front of her, his big body a wind barrier she shamelessly huddled behind. He was holding her hand, tugging her along like a boat, and she knew he did it so they wouldn't get separated in the busy dark, only she couldn't help but remember the last time he'd held her hand. Her heart pounded now just as fast as it had then. He'd been so tender, to touch her like that, as he pulled her apart with his kiss. She still couldn't decide what it meant. Her logical brain said, "It means he likes you, obviously." And maybe, probably, he did. But it couldn't be that simple, or that lovely. Things never were for Chloe. Their first stop of the night had the cheapest drinks, which Red had explained in the taxi was strategic. She'd tried to point out that expensive drinks wouldn't bother her, but he'd muttered something about posh money wasters and told her to get into the spirit of the thing. So here they were, heading toward a slightly shady-looking club with a small field of cigarette butts littering the pavement in front of it. There was a sign the colour of her glasses above the door that read Bluebell. Bluebell's pounding music took every other nightclub's pounding music by the throat and squeezed. The closer they got, the more she wondered if she ought to have brought some earplugs. Red nodded at the massive black-coated bouncers, dragged her through the doors, and then they were inside. Everything was dark, flashing, and sweaty. She didn't like it. No, that wasn't right. She simply wasn't used to it, or drunk enough to enjoy it yet. Of course, a little voice in her head muttered that the hangover she would incur from drinking enough alcohol to make this place palatable would also leave her bedbound for a week. She squashed that voice. It was a party pooper, and it belonged to the old boring Chloe, not the Chloe who rescued cats. Wait, she wasn't supposed to be thinking about Smudge. Red somehow carved out a space for them at the bar. She found herself caged between his chest and the sticky surface, his hands braced on either side of her body. He bent his head to her ear, and the feel of his breath against the side of her throat made everything between her legs tingle. She pressed her thighs together while he shouted over the music, "What do you want?" Good thing she'd already decided on this, or her poor, scrambled brain wouldn't have been able to produce an answer.
"Cherry sours!"
It used to be her favourite. Apparently, Red didn't approve because he snorted, the puff of air hot against her skin. Still, he caught the bartender's attention and before she knew it, three vivid pink shots were lined up in front of her, along with a glass of something dark. She was supposed to be paying for everything tonight. That had been her intention anyway, but Red had handed over a note before she got the chance. She tilted her head back to glare up at him. He winked at her and picked up his glass. Coke and something, she thought. Or maybe just Coke. Then he brought it to his lips, and she caught the sharp scent as his throat bobbed with each long swallow. Coke and something, definitely. As definite as the slick arousal growing between her legs. It really had been too long. If the heat of his body and the sight of him swallowing were enough to make her jittery like this. She faced front, and grabbed a shot. It went down easy, but she found herself making a face. It was sweeter than she remembered. And speaking of memories, this had been a lot more fun when she'd shared a row of shots with her girlfriends, drinking one after the other, shrieking foolishly afterward like they'd done something shockingly wild. But Beth wasn't here. Sarah wasn't here. Katie wasn't here. None of them were here, and this wasn't 10 years ago. She bit her lip and downed the next shot. Then she felt Red's hot breath against her skin again, smelled sharp alcohol as he spoke.
"You okay, Button?"
She held up the last shot of cherry sours and shouted,
"Will you drink this?"
"You don't want it."
He narrowed his eyes. Awkwardly, she told him,
"I want you to have it."
He nodded, as if that made a lick of sense, took the shot and downed it. She took his glass in turn and had a taste, pretending it didn't thrill her that they were now sharing a glass. He'd ordered rum and coke. She licked his drink off her lips and tried not to enjoy it too much.
"Hey."
He took the glass back, his free hand running down her arm in an action he probably meant to be soothing. It set her on fire.
"Slow down," he said. "Give yourself a second."
She bristled. Most of her arousal forgotten. She was seconds away from a scathing comment on men who thought they could tell women what to drink when he leaned down and spoke again.
"Get in, properly wankered,"
he said in an academic sort of tone, "is a fine art."
"It is if you want to avoid the messier side effects anyway."
While she absorbed that, he caught the bartender again. She didn't know how he managed it. Must be one of the benefits of giant gingerism. He was impossible to miss. The bartender produced 2 bottles of water, boo, and 4 more shots. Red shoved a water at her and paid again. Then he finished his rum and coke in 2 impressive gulps and drank his own water, which made her feel less indignant.
"All right,"
he said, finally, splitting the shots in half.
"You and me, let's have it."
Surprise filled her, chased by pure pleasure. She swallowed her share easily this time, barely shuddering at the taste, and when he did the same, something inside her felt lighter, warmer. Chloe giggled at nothing and let her head tip back onto his shoulder. For one dangerous second, his arm wrapped around her waist and squeezed. His hair spilled over her skin as he bent his head closer. Then he let her go as if it had never happened at all. He caught her hand, stepped back, and they were moving again, their clasped palms their only connection now. Chloe wobbled behind him like she was on stilts. She hadn't realised just how integral Red's chest had been to her structural stability during the last 10 minutes. Stumbling after 4 shots? How mortifying, but fun too. Until she realised where Red was leading her anyway. To the dance floor, because that was what she wanted. She'd told him so in the taxi. She wanted to go out, get drunk, and dance. Except, now that they were headed in that direction, deep into a churning mass of bodies, she didn't want to do that at all. It was flooding back suddenly, how much she'd always hated this part. With her friend, she remembered, she'd bobbed awkwardly at the edge of the group, feeling like a ninny. That wasn't how she wanted to feel tonight. She tugged at Red's hand, and he looked back at her, raising his eyebrows in question. When she looked at the dance floor and shook her head, he changed course without a word, pulling her smoothly towards the sticky, shadowy booths in the corner. They slid into one beneath an alcove, and by some audio architectural miracle, the volume lowered just enough for Chloe to hear herself think. Thank God. All this pounding and pulsing was making her vaguely homicidal.
"What's up?"
Red asked, his knee nudging hers. She looked at their legs beneath the filthy table, and a thought danced wildly through her mind. He could touch her. He could slide his hand up her skirt right now, and no one in this hellhole would be any the wiser. Then she looked up, met his endless eyes, and could have sworn he was thinking exactly the same thing. Each flash of strobe lights in the room lit up another facet of the hunger on his face. but he didn't move. He sat and waited patiently to hear that she was okay. And suddenly, she was bored with lying to him. Must be the alcohol.
I don't like it here,
she shouted. He gave her a look that seemed to say, colour me shocked. But there was no gloating in his response.
Want me to take you somewhere quieter?
Yes, no, I...
She hesitated, her mind whirring. This, tonight. It wasn't what she'd really wanted, because she hadn't known what she'd really wanted when she'd put this on the list. She'd been hunting for an indescribable thrill, a feeling she remembered from nights out with her friends. But she'd misunderstood where the feeling came from. It wasn't about drinking and partying in some dingy club. It had been about the people. The constant laughter they shared. Too high on each other to care that they were being obnoxious. Group trips to the bathroom like a small army unit, where the mission objective was to help each other squat over filthy toilets without their dresses touching the seat. Belonging. Maybe her list wasn't quite as perfect or as clinical as she'd assumed, because this was the first item she hadn't enjoyed crossing off, and she couldn't deny that she was disappointed. But she could fix this, couldn't she? Plans changed, didn't they? Wasn't that why she'd written the list in the first place? To become the kind of woman who turned disappointments around, who thought flexibly and did what she wanted to do. Yes, she decided, yes, that was exactly why. She turned back to Red, found him waiting with those three little lines of concentration between his eyebrows.
I want to go somewhere else, she shouted.
He nodded.
We can do that.
But she wasn't done.
I want to know what you do for fun.
His frown cleared, replaced by a startled, hesitant pleasure.
Yeah?
Yes. Show me.
They left the club, and Red put his jacket over Chloe's shivering shoulders. He wouldn't miss the warmth. When he was around her, he burned from the inside out. She must be tipsy as fuck because she didn't push him off or say something smart. She just smiled all pretty and held his hand as they cut through the cold, wet night. Since the moment she'd decided to abandon their plan, she'd been electric, vibrating brilliance, her walk slow and loose-hipped, all the barriers and little hesitations he was used to from her fading away, like she'd turned fearless. He liked it. He liked her so happy that her soft, full lips had a permanent curl, that her eyes sparkled and her cheeks plumped. Tiny drops of rain spattered the lenses of her glasses, beaded on the flyaways frizzing from her hair, slicked her skin until she gleamed under the streetlights like a jewel. He slung an arm over her shoulders, and she let him. Joined together like that, they strode through familiar, sleepless streets. Leaving this city for London had been Red's first mistake of many. He'd thought he needed to do things in a certain way, as rigid then as Chloe was now about her list. But being around her was really driving home how wrong he'd been. There was no single way to reach any goal. He should have been flexible, should have stayed in the city he loved and tried to succeed as himself, instead of going somewhere else to be someone else beside a woman who'd never really given a fuck about him. He still wasn't sure how to take things back to the start, how to build the life he wanted on his own terms. But tonight, he looked up at the stars and knew, really fucking knew, that he'd figure it out. He was figuring it out. The funny thing about Chloe was, when he wasn't busy panting after her, she made his head a hell of a lot clearer.
I think you'll regret asking me to do this,
he admitted, his voice rising over passing traffic and distant music, and the shouts of drunken students waiting at a nearby bus stop.
Why?
Her shoes made little squeaking noises against the wet pavement.
Are your hobbies so depraved?
Her voice was rich with a flirtation he didn't quite trust. If she could sound that unreservedly into him, she was a little bit drunk. Lightly, he said.
I think you'd like it if my hobbies were depraved, but no, they're not. They're boring.
I'm supposed to be the boring one. You're supposed to cure me.
Was that what she thought? His chest tightened. his frown automatic. Chloe Brown was the furthest thing from boring on this planet. He didn't say that, though, because she wouldn't hear it.
This definitely won't cure you.
Oh?
She pouted. He tensed every muscle in his body to stop himself from leaning down and biting that plump lower lip. Then she stopped walking, cocked her head and murmured,
Let me guess. We're here.
He looked up with a start. And shit, she was right. He hadn't even noticed. She split time into something endless and wonderful, like crystals splitting light into rainbows. Or maybe he was so fucking hungry for her, he was slowly losing his grip on reality. One of those.
Yep,
he confirmed.
We're here.
In a tucked-away section of the city, the kind lined with boutiques where only the rich bothered to window shop, there was an alleyway. It was the kind of alleyway that would look suspicious and possibly dangerous in any other part of town, but here, it just seemed mysterious. It helped that they could see light twinkling at the other end and hear raucous nightlife a few streets over. It also helped that the alleyway itself was lined with art, fairy lights wrapped around the easels. The first piece was an abstract vinyl print that, when you squinted just right, looked like a huge pale flower petal. When you squinted just wrong, it looked like dead skin. The second was a stark stylized oil painting of a panda on acid. The third canvas, the last dropped breadcrumb, looked like Roy Lichtenstein had taken on Klimt. He didn't hate it exactly.
Random art in an alley,
Chloe said. Is this really what you do for fun? He tensed a little, wondering if she'd say something that stripped him painfully to blooded flesh, like Pippa would have. But then he remembered that Chloe was nothing like Pippa, which was why he'd brought her here. Because watching her chase what she wanted made him realize it was time. Because this would be easier with her than it would be alone. Because she'd asked him to show her something honest, whether she realized it or not. And this was as honest as he knew how to be. And because she was too careful, too sweet, too cautiously loving to ever smash anyone's heart to pieces for a laugh.
Yep, he said finally. This is what I do for fun.
They were a few paces from the open doorway that was his goal. A distressed sign hung over it that read, Julian Bishop, Art Gallery.
Adorable, she murmured.
Sounded like she was talking about him, but she couldn't be. He looked at her. She was. He started to speak, but his voice came out a little too rough, so he stopped, cleared his throat, tried again.
You're calling me cute, Chloe.
I am, you giant blushing art nerd.
Well, if he hadn't been blushing before, he surely was now. Stepping over the threshold after avoiding this world for so long was like getting something pierced. He'd had his nose done when he was 21, which had been a mistake on a face like his, and now he remembered the sudden, sharp push and watering eyes. He felt half a second of panic before deciding he couldn't be asked to make a big deal out of this, even inside his own head. He was here. It was done. Because of Chloe. Strange, that. The gallery's entryway was tiny, housing a flight of spiral stairs.
You all right with those?
He asked.
If I said no, would you give me a piggyback?
His lips twitched.
Yeah.
Good to know, she murmured wryly. But don't worry, I'll manage.
She turned, studying the little space around them. It was sparse and pretentious, which was all part of the fun. The white paint on the walls flaked horribly, and the floors would probably give your bare feet splinters, but the paintings left to stand in the street had price tags in the low thousands. The stuff upstairs would be even more expensive. Artists were all a lost cause, he thought, himself included. The only interesting thing in this cramped space was the pink-painted garden chair jammed into a corner. A sign was tied to its seat, with clashing red silk. Don't sit on me, I'm famous. Chloe arched a brow. Gosh, a chair that reminds me of my grandmother. I feel so at home. Here was something he hadn't considered. How hilarious Chloe's sarcasm would be in a place like this. Always wondered what the chair's famous for, he said. She flashed him a look. You don't know? Her face took on the faintly bored, slightly amused expression he'd seen on countless classy women in galleries fancier than this one. He'd never been in on the joke, even when his girlfriend was leading the jokes. But Chloe was about to bring him in. Madam Chair comes from money, of course. Oh, of course, I remember now. She was on Celebrity Big Brother. Chloe arched an eyebrow, bit down on her growing smile. He could almost see the laughter trapped in her throat, but she refused to let it out. Was she indeed? And how did she do? Not great, he sighed. Long story short, Madam Chair got into an argument with a Hollyoaks actress about the ingredients of fast food, ended up stuffing a frozen chicken nugget down the poor girl's throat live on national TV. Chloe choked, coughed, wheezed. Red patted her helpfully on the back. Apparently that knocked the last of her control loose because she dissolved into helpless laughter. He stood there and watched as she bent double, clutching his jacket, gasping for air, completely carefree and unrestrained. Watching her made his heart feel oddly warm and glowy, like he could stand here and soak up her happiness forever. That sounded a little bit like heaven. After long, joy-filled moments, she straightened, dabbing at her eyes beneath her glasses, her voice slightly hoarse, she said. Now